Before we get started with today's show, I want to tell you guys about betonline.ag. Round one of the basketball playoffs is here, and regardless of whether or not you're taking Boston, Miami, Milwaukee, or Minnesota to win the championship, BetOnline has you covered with all the odds, props, promos, and parlays you need for the entire two-month basketball playoffs. Use our promo code BLEAV, B-L-E-A-V, with your first deposit, with the link in the description to this episode, and you can pick up a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, where the game starts. Good morning, good evening, good afternoon, or good night, however and whenever it is you may be listening. Thank you for stopping on into another fantabulous episode of The Take It Easy Podcast, live on the Bleav Podcast Network, except it isn't live because it is, as always, a podcast. And podcasts aren't live. It's the whole purpose of this podcasting thing. You can listen however and whenever it is that you so choose, and we appreciate that you have decided to stop in however and whenever you may be listening. Welcome, 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 everybody. We are so incredibly grateful for you taking the time to stop in and hang out with us here on a wonderful Monday, April 22nd, according to my count. Again, it may not be that according to your count, but we appreciate you stopping in however and whenever you may be listening. Let's talk some NBA playoff basketball. Last Monday's show, we did a breakdown of the NBA playoffs, some of the teams, some of the matchups, things of those sorts, and some of the playoff picture wasn't filled yet. Apologies, I was planning on Wednesday's episode this week being about the fall of the Golden State Warriors, because adding to the Golden State-Sacramento rivalry thing, the Sacramento Kings now put an end to the Golden State Warriors as we know it, because like it's probably going to be Klay Thompson's last game, and obviously live out here in Sacramento, do all sorts of Sacramento Kings-type stuff here, and we don't talk as much about the Kings this year, because Kings are in the lottery this year, and they're not even like in the lottery where it's fun to play the lottery game. It's like you're in the lottery and you're picking 14th. Like your chances of jumping to the top of the lottery are like never happened in the history of the sport, except it did happen one time back in 1993, where the Orlando Magic had the worst odds in the lottery and jumped all the way up to the number one pick. But like, they changed the entire lottery odds to prevent something like that from ever happening again. So, good on you, Sacramento, but your team is at the top of the lottery, and you missed the playoffs, and your season's over. But I bring all this up to say this. We were going to talk about the Warriors. We didn't have time to talk about the Warriors. But hey, the Warriors got booted out of the playoffs, and since all seven games from the first round were absolute blowouts, we might as well talk about the Warriors a little bit right here off the top of the show, because every year the NBA playoffs are structured the same way, where the first weekend they play all eight game ones at the same time. Just like in 2 weeks, we're going to have a Monday podcast where if there's any game sevens, the game sevens will have been played by that point. And 2 years ago, if you'll remember, during the NBA playoffs, we had Kevin Durant and the Brooklyn Nets play against the Boston Celtics in the first round. This was the year the Celtics ended up going to the championship, and Jason Tatum hit a game-winning shot against Brooklyn, and what ensued was the worst playoff series of Kevin Durant's career to that point. Like, to that date, that was the worst playoff game Kevin Durant had ever had at any point in his career. And if you think back to last year, on the Monday after the first round of the playoffs, we did a whole podcast about Golden State Warriors and Sacramento Kings, where after playoffs game one, we talked about that series. We talked about the comparisons between Jokic and Sabonis. The Nets were playing the Sixers in a series that ended in like 6 days. So we talked about Ben Simmons a little bit and how that trade came to fruition. And I also pointed out how incredibly funny it was that Austin Reeves, we lived in a world where in game one of a playoff series between the Lakers and the Grizzlies, Austin Reeves called an ISO with 1 minute to play in a tie game to wave off LeBron James on an ISO play, which is genuinely one of the funniest things I think I've ever seen during a basketball game. Just waved off LeBron James, called an ISO for himself and hit it. So like on the first day after game ones, there's always interesting stories to talk about. And we'll get to some of those in a second. But first, Golden State Warriors getting knocked out of the playoffs. This is the last version of the Steph, Klay, and Draymond Warriors we expect to play together. And they've had a long run together. I think the only group of three that has had as equally long of a run was the Tony Parker, Manu Ginobili, and Tim Duncan Spurs. But if I remember correctly from the book that we did, The Spurs Dynasty, available wherever you get books if you want to purchase it. If I remember correctly, Ginobili got there in 2000, or sorry, Parker got there in 2000, Ginobili got there in 02. He was drafted in 99, but he didn't get there until the 01-02 season. And then Duncan was the first to retire in 16. So they got 16 years of a run together. This would be year 13 between Klay, Steph, and Draymond. And I believe the stat is true that going back to 2011, the only players who are, now that Udonis Haslam is retired, I believe the only players in the entire NBA who still play for the same team that they played for in 2011 are Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, and Draymond Green. Like, I believe that's a true stat, that the only three players that remain on the same team from 2011 are those three in Golden State. So we're talking about like longevity and success from a bygone era. And this was kind of their last season together. We said in the offseason, they're like one injury away from being that 11th team out of the playoffs. Because we were looking at the West and we were like, okay, there's four teams we know suck. It's Portland, it's San Antonio, it's Utah, and it's Houston. Like, those teams suck. I know Houston spent a bunch of money for Fred VanVleet and Dylan Brooks and things like that. There's four teams that suck, and then there's 11 teams that are fighting for 10 spots. And of the group, the Thunder added an all-star caliber player by having Chet Holmgren come in. Almost rookie of the year in a year that Wembanyama doesn't exist. The Pelicans get back a fully healthy Zion Williamson. The Timberwolves add an all-star by virtue of Karl Anthony Towns coming back after Karl Anthony Towns missed a whole season. Last year, he was out 54 games, and then you see him come back this year, makes the all-star team, and Minnesota's the three seed in the Western Conference, and when I thought they might lose a first-round series to any of these teams, came out and beat the crap out of the Phoenix Suns. Just absolutely beat the crap out of Phoenix. Anthony Edwards looked awesome. Just beat the crap out of Phoenix in Game 1. Again, time will tell if they win the series, but just top five defense beat the crap out of the Phoenix Suns. And all these teams were adding back all-stars into teams that previously were in the play-in. Minnesota was a play-in team. New Orleans was a play-in team. Oklahoma City was a play-in team. Lo and behold, all those teams make the jump into the playoffs. So someone's got to fall back to the pack. And one of those teams was Memphis. Memphis just completely had their season imploded by Ja Morant suspension and then a Ja Morant torn shoulder and just a chaos amount of injuries. Like, I think it was the most games missed to injury of any team in like 5 years or something like that. Just a chaos level number of injuries for the Memphis Grizzlies. So now you're guaranteed 10 teams basically. So like, you know, we knew who the four crappy teams were coming into the season. It was, like I said, Portland, San Antonio, Utah, and Houston. We knew those teams were crappy coming into the season. I know Houston gave a run for their money at the end of the season, but Houston was a crappy team through and through. No amount of Fred VanVleet's and Dylan Brooks's can fix the fact that you don't have a true all-star on the team. And of that group of 10, the four teams that were play-in teams last year, New Orleans, Minnesota, Oklahoma City, and the Lakers, all of those teams added all-stars apart from the Lakers. And the Lakers ended up in exactly the same position they were last year. Like, the Lakers were the 7th seed in the Western playoffs last year, they're the 7th seed in the Western playoffs this year. Last year, they got some good matchups that got them into the Western Conference Finals where they got swept by Denver. This year, they're just going to get swept out by Denver in the first round, which, by the way, Denver, still totally overwhelming. Like, the Jamal Murray, Nikola Jokic two-man game, plus with Aaron Gordon leaking out as an alley-oop option. Also, the funniest thing, I was joking about this as I was watching the game with my roommate, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope being the glue that holds together multiple champion teams was not something I had on my bingo card 4 years ago when he was getting cut by the Detroit Pistons and because he was a Clutch Sport client was stealing a bunch of money from the Lakers. Did not have Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, glue guy that holds together multiple different champion teams in the NBA 4 years ago. It's like an absolute shocker. Absolute shocker after he spent 3 years stealing money from the Lakers because he happened to be a Clutch Sports client, and the Lakers had no cap space to give to, or no one who was willing to take their ample cap space during the lean years of 2018 and 2019. But bring that back to the Warriors. The three play-in teams that got bounced last year, they all made jumps. The Lakers got the exact same seed as last year, and the Pelicans, who were the 5 seed up until late in the season, they completely fell off at the very end. Then you factor in Phoenix adds an all-star in Bradley Beal. The Clippers add an all-star in James Harden. And you look up and it's like, oh, all these teams got better. 5 teams in the West added an all-star caliber player from last season coming forward. And then you look at the Warriors and you think, not only are the Warriors worse than they were last year, they dramatically overachieved last season. Coming off a championship, they overachieved by being the 6th seed, because the Kings were better than that team last year, and the Warriors overachieved to get to the place that they were. Add in the fact that they traded away Jordan Poole for a short-term option of Chris Paul that simply just did not work. Like, part of it, Chris Paul broke his hand and missed like 2 months of the season. That trade just simply did not work. The Jordan Poole wasn't great in Washington, but it's not like they bamboozled Washington by giving them Jordan Poole. Like, that deal did not work out for the Warriors. But they brought back Steph, they brought back Draymond, and they kind of turned over the keys to the young guys, including at one point putting Klay Thompson on the bench for Jonathan Kuminga. And what I thought was so interesting is that in their last game together, this was a thing that I said in Sacramento the week going up to the game, is like, it's not going to be another 50-point Steph game. That's just the Warriors don't have that in them at this stage of the game. It's not going to be another 50-point Steph game against the Kings, no less, in Sacramento in a winner-go-home game. That's just simply, it's not going to be Steph taking 38 shots. That's simply not going to happen in this play-in game. But it's the other guys that the Kings do have to be worried about, because the Warriors legitimately go 8 deep with guys that can pose a problem to the Kings. And not only did the other guys not show up, Klay Thompson had the worst game of his NBA career. And granted, it's the play-in round, so like those stats basically disappear. Just in case you guys didn't know that, those stats literally just disappear at the end of the games. Like, Kobe White had a career-high 42 points. No, he didn't, because the stats don't log anywhere for some weird reason. And Klay Thompson had the first zero-point game that he's had in his career as a starter. Klay Thompson had the first zero-point game of his career since Steve Kerr became his coach. Klay Thompson had the first zero-point game he's had in any NBA game since February of 2012, which was when this whole thing started with Klay Thompson and Steph Curry and Draymond Green. And it's so interesting that in what is probably Klay Thompson's last game as a Golden State Warrior, he had the worst game of his Warrior tenure. It's one of those moments that if you're writing the narrative or writing the story, which granted it's already been written, like Ethan Strauss's book on the Warriors is one of the best sports books that I've read in recent time. It's really, really good and kind of explains Kevin Durant in an empathetic way better than I've seen anywhere in sports. And if you're doing the narrative story of the Warriors, that being how it ends, with Klay being the first to go and Klay going out with the worst game of his professional career under all the pressure of trying to get the next contract, under all the anger and frustration that he's publicly expressed about going to the bench and not getting the contract from the Warriors, being genuinely hurt by the fact that the Warriors are not offering him another contract. It's a difficult way for that to go out, because either that's the last game Klay Thompson ever plays with the Golden State Warriors, or the Golden State Warriors make the call to turn these next 3 years into a nostalgia act. These next 3 years are Klay, Draymond, and Steph get to retire on their own terms. We have not had an all-star on the team, but Klay, I mean, Wiggins had the one all-star season where he was the second best player and they won the championship, but these three guys get to retire how they want to retire. Doesn't matter whether we win or lose. We turn this either into the Kobe years, the lean Kobe years, of we're going to lose games, but these guys get to retire how they want to retire, or we just have Mike Dunleavy do what Mike Dunleavy was hired to do, which is break up the dynasty. Bob Myers left so that Lacob, his son, and Mike Dunleavy could break apart the dynasty, or they choose to bring them back and let them retire on their own terms, even if it means sacrificing winning basketball. That's not to say that getting rid of Klay and getting rid of Draymond won't facilitate winning basketball over the next 3 years. It's just they've made so many mistakes that the mistakes have finally caught up to them. I'm genuinely surprised that when they gave Klay that extension after he tore his ACL and then missed two full seasons, genuinely surprised that 5 years later, he made it to the end of that contract. Draymond's going to be back another year by virtue of him signing that long-term extension and the fact that he's still more valuable to them than he is to anyone else. But Klay might be more valuable to someone else than he is to the Warriors at this point. And that's the tipping point of, is it time to say goodbye to Klay? Or do Klay, Steph, and Draymond get to retire on their own terms? That's the question that you legitimately have to ask. Is like, even if we don't have a chance to win again, do Steph, Klay, and Draymond get to retire on their own terms, even at the expense of long-term growth and success, because of what those three mean to this team, and because those three are all going to be statue guys outside that arena? Because those three built that arena. All three of them are going to be statue guys, jersey retired guys. What does it mean for that organization to let those players stay or retire on their own terms? And I think that's just such an interesting situation to watch, because this is the first time in my life I've watched from the beginning to now. I've watched the first years of Klay, Steph, and Draymond, and I have enough perspective now to watch it happen in real time. Because at least with the Spurs, they had facilitated the transition by drafting a future Hall of Famer and Defensive Player of the Year in Kawhi Leonard. The Warriors drafted James Wiseman. The Warriors turned Kevin Durant into Andrew Wiggins, which granted won them a fourth championship, but it doesn't necessarily indicate like long-term relevance and sustainability. Like, there's going to be some lean years coming up for the Warriors, even as they prioritize Pozemski, prioritize Kuminga, prioritize maybe Trace Jackson Davis because of what he helps them do on the defensive side of the ball. But it means the Moody pick is a wash because there's no room for him to play. It means future first and second round guys don't have spots on the roster unless you move or have rotation minutes unless you move a guy like Kuminga. It's just that they're looking up and they don't have as many options as I think they thought they did. And now they kind of have to ask themselves, what is the next step for Golden State? And it's a really, really interesting predicament because I understand both sides. It is, we think we can try and do something better by facilitating more minutes to Kuminga, or we say Steph, Klay, and Draymond get to retire on their own terms. They're all coming back for at least two more seasons, which I think after two seasons is probably when Draymond is going to call it a career, but they all get to come back on their own terms. They all get to retire together. We just spend 2 or 3 years with them together and then reevaluate when Steph is 38, when Klay is 38, when Draymond's 37 and probably retired. That's when we stop and reevaluate where things stand, is after they, instead of spending 13 years together, They get to spend 16 years together, even if the last few result in more seasons like this. And there's a case to be made for both sides. I understand both sides exactly well, because neither is going to probably result in sustainable winning basketball. That's just the bottom line. None of it is going to result in sustainable winning basketball, because they haven't drafted an all-star in the last 12 seasons since Steph, Clay, and Draymond. And so that just leaves you in a position where you have players, but you don't have the players that are going to build sustainable winning beyond this run. And maybe they got to go to the bottom of the lottery to do it, except, oh, by the way, that's how they spent 2020 and 2021, was at the bottom of the lottery, facilitating those exact same players that now, when you talk about Wiseman, Kuminga, and Moody, Wiseman's gone, Moody's on his way out, and if they re-sign Klay Thompson, Kuminga ain't got much of a role on this here basketball team in the way that they hoped when they drafted those three players and did the dual timeline thing 4 years ago. It's an interesting question to ask. Do you move on from them, try and double down on Kuminga's development, or do you let him stick around as long as you want? It's a really interesting, difficult question.
Hey, how the f*** we stuck up in the snow? Guess we fly this tomorrow. Bookies know I keep a clip, won't change what I'ma get tomorrow. Back stuck on the plane, I might have to buy a fit tomorrow. In this cuffing weather, grab your b***h, you might get hit tomorrow. You gon' set the pick, I'm pulling up from 40. Boom, boom. Cause they act like they don't know me. I'ma tap my wrist, it's dame time. I give them fits on with the gang, we keep it lit. Captain, let me in the pit. Hey, me and T, I thought y'all knew that was my had to go and grab my T-sip off the sixer. Shooters in the locker room like we the wizard. Got me tight, stepped up in this blizzard.
All right, shout out to Dame Dalla and the Milwaukee Bucks, which, for those who don't know, because I understand there's obviously new people to the show, that transition that we like to use is Damian Lillard and the Portland Trailblazers doing a freestyle rap while the team was stuck for 7 hours on an airplane sitting at the airport in Portland, where they then had to fly to Sacramento and play a game like 4 hours after arriving because they were stuck in a snowstorm in Portland. It was all very much a peak 2023 moment of the shitty Portland Trailblazers being stuck on a plane with Matisse Thybulle and Jeremy Grant and Anfernee Simons and a bunch of dudes that are maybe still on the team, maybe not, but the Portland Trailblazers did a freestyle Blizzard rap with Damian Lillard. Damian Lillard now plays for the Milwaukee Bucks, and Damian Lillard did something that's pretty funny on Sunday, which is he scored 35 points in the first half of Game 1 between the Bucks and Pacers, a series that I said, and I heard people saying, like, if you don't have Giannis on the Bucks, I know they're a champion team and they have Middleton and Lopez and Bobby Portis and like Jay Crowder and foundational pieces from a champion team of 3 years ago. But they also have Damian Lillard as their best player, who might be worse than Tyrese Halliburton. And I know that's not a good day to say that, because Tyrese Halliburton had himself a Ben Simmons triple single with 9 points, 8 assists, and 6 rebounds in Game 1 against the Bucks. But there were people saying, like, Tyrese might be better than Damian Lillard as things stand right now. And Damian Lillard came out and said, hell no. First meaningful playoff game he's played since that game in 2021 where against Denver he scored like the last 24 points of the game for the Bucks, including 24 points of the game for the Blazers, hitting a game-tying bank shot to send it to overtime, hitting a game-tying three-pointer in overtime to go to double overtime. Again, he scored the last 24 points of the game for the Blazers against the Nuggets, and they lost because CJ McCollum stepped out of bounds when he caught a pass from Lillard in the final 10 seconds of double overtime. He had like 50 some odd points in that game. And I was looking at it like, holy shit, his first playoff game since then, 35 points at halftime. Bucks were up 27 at halftime, which, by the way, wasn't even the most shocking halftime score of the day. Nonetheless, the weekend, the most shocking halftime score of the weekend was the Clippers without Kawhi Leonard putting up 55-30 on the Mavericks. The Mavericks, the same team that a couple years ago beat the Suns in a game 7 by 48 points, that Mavericks team scored 8 total points in the second quarter of game 1 against the Clippers. And the Clippers beat that ass. James Harden beat that ass. 20 points at halftime, outscoring Luka and Kyrie combined. Beat that ass, James Harden did. And James Harden, by the way, talk shit about James Harden, but ever since James Harden has become a number two option for a playoff team, he's had many of his greatest playoff games of his career. He had two games last year where he carried the Sixers against the Celtics, and now he put up more points than Luka and Kyrie combined in the first half of a playoff game for the Los Angeles Clippers. I was talking about Damian Lillard before that because Damian Lillard put up 35 points in the first half against the Pacers. They were up by 27. And then Damian Lillard had 0 in the second half. And they got outscored by the Pacers, but it really didn't matter. Because Damian Lillard had 35 at halftime of a playoff game. His first playoff game since the last playoff game he played. That was the most impressive playoff basketball game I have ever seen with my own two eyes. Yes, they lost to the Nuggets. It was still the most impressive playoff game that I have ever seen. It was incredible. And Lillard came out and put up 35 today. And that's exactly why I said, before going into the playoffs, yeah, Milwaukee's the best chance anyone's going to have to beat the Celtics. They're the 3 seed. Yes, they're going to have to play the Knicks at some point. They can beat the Knicks. Then Giannis injured his calf, and I'm like, oh, I don't know. Maybe the Pacers can get him in the first round. Nope. Playoff Dame is still very much around. It's just funny to think about that this was the first playoff game he picked up right where he left off 2.5 years ago. I don't know, basically 3 years ago. Call it 3 years ago. He picked up right where he left off 3 years ago when he played one of the most impressive, I still say the most impressive playoff game that I've ever seen, was him scoring the last 24 points, bank shot to go to overtime, game-tying three-pointer to go to double overtime, like, just the most singularly impressive playoff performance that I have seen was Damian Lillard against the Nuggets in 21, which was his last meaningful playoff minutes until this game today where he put up 35 points. What else happened in the weekend? I mentioned Minnesota whooped that ass on the Suns, mentioned the Lakers whooped that ass, got their ass whooped, excuse me, by the Nuggets, which, by the way, shout out to you, Nikola Jokic, for this reason and this reason specifically. I know everyone saw the whole Despicable Me thing that Jokic did, which, for those who don't know, Jokic dressed up like Gru from Despicable Me for a product placed commercial that they did for Despicable Me 4, because they aired a commercial during the Lakers-Nuggets game where Jokic goes to therapy. And he's talking about these minions keep following him around because he looks like Gru. And I gotta give a shout out to Jokic's agent, because the thing that people used to say is like, oh, Jokic doesn't want to do commercials. Jokic doesn't want to be known. He just wants to go to Serbia and play, race horses. And, you know, he plays basketball as a hobby. And I think ever since then, Jokic has kind of been trolling us with that, because not only, I think after the first time where he was like, no, I don't want to go to parade, and everyone made fun of that, my hypothesis is that ever since, Jokic is trolling us with how little he doesn't care about basketball. Like, he's intentionally trolling us about how little he cares about basketball just to try and get a rise out of people. And I know Nikola Jokic maybe doesn't like media attention and he doesn't have social media or whatever, but you know what that man likes? Free money to do not a lot. Like those hotels.com commercials that he's in. Yeah, it's like six-figure checks for doing very minimal work. This Despicable Me thing, he doesn't care what he wears to the arena. If they give him the Despicable Me outfit, he'll walk into the arena, and he already had the pre-recorded commercial in the can for Despicable Me 4. And by the way, it was a great marketing idea for Despicable Me 4. The internet did the marketing for you because Jokic looks like Gru, and they had the commercial pre-recorded, and it was a premeditated joke, which, by the way, I appreciate anytime advertisers use the power of the internet to help promote their movie. That is a really smart idea that they came up with, and Jokic was willing to go along with the bit because he doesn't care what he wears to the arena. And he's not going to have the social media clips to watch later unless one of the teammates show it to him. It's a really good idea. But you know what Jokic has done ever since people said he doesn't care about media attention or anything? Been in like every fucking commercial that you've seen, being endearing and silly. Like, Jokic has 4 different commercials running during this NBA playoffs. LeBron has, like, maybe 1. Steph Curry has, like, maybe 2. I know he's in those Chase commercials with Kevin Hart, but, like, I can't think of a second one. Oh, Rakuten. He does Rakuten commercials. Jokic has, like, 4. He's in multiple Hotels.com commercials. He did the NBA playoff, it's playoff blank or whatever. The Despicable Me thing was the most famous marketing campaign anyone's done in the last year around sports. Like, yeah, Jokic will take your money for doing very little effort. That is the thing with advertisers. You don't have to put in that much effort to get a lot of money when you are someone of the basketball stature and importance of Nikola Jokic. And I thought that whole Despicable Me thing was very funny. I mentioned the Miami Heat a little bit earlier. Like, damn, bro, Miami-Boston would have been awesome if not for Jimmy Butler getting hurt. Like, Miami made it I said last week I wanted to wait to talk about 76ers and Heat until after the play-in, once we knew who the matchups were. And now I don't even want to talk about Heat-Celtics, because, like, you can make a case for the fact that Boston might have the 4 best players in this entire series. Like, it all depends on how you feel about Bam Adebayo, because they definitely have 4 of the 5 best players in this series. It's just a matter of perspective on how you feel about Bam Adebayo to say the Celtics have the 4 best players in this series. Boston's gonna whoop that ass on the Miami Heat, and it sucks because it would have been fun to watch that rivalry have another chapter added to it, but it's gonna be a total smoked out of the playoffs because Jimmy injured his knee colliding with Kelly Oubre during the play-in game. So that series would have been interesting. I would have maybe led the show with that because the rivalry thing is awesome, and if we do rivalries correct, it will make playoffs more exciting. Like with Boston and Miami, they've met in 3 of the last 4 Eastern Conference Finals. Would have been freaking awesome to have continued to build that narrative up of the 2 most successful basketball teams in the Eastern Conference's 2 most successful basketball teams over the last 4 to 5 years. And yes, that includes the Milwaukee Bucks. But, you know, Jimmy Butler's hurt, so it doesn't matter anymore. Knicks-Sixers, that series is going to be fun, right? That was a back-and-forth game. The one thing I'll say that was funny is Joel Embiid getting hurt. Joel Embiid getting hurt was not funny. Joel Embiid getting hurt by throwing an alley-oop off the glass where he put a poster on OG Anunoby. Pretty funny. Because I saw the highlight of that play, but I didn't watch the game live. And seeing Jokic toss the alley-oop to OG Anunoby, he tossed the alley-oop off the glass, caught it with one hand, dunked it over OG Anunoby, and then as he came to the floor, like, collapsed because he landed a little too hard on his torn meniscus knee that he's trying to play through. And gotta say, dude was stunting, and he forgot that his knee wasn't ready to be stunting. And that's one of the tough things about playing players through injuries. Like, I'm surprised that Embiid is able to be out there, despite the fact that he has, again, a torn meniscus. But, man, it was him just doing cool Embiid things that made him the MVP last year and would have made him the MVP this year, if not for, and again, this bears repeating, a torn fucking meniscus. But that torn meniscus kind of kept him in check, because he was out here stunting and doing Embiid things, and the body doesn't let you do those things when you have an injury like that. And it's just, it's the muscle memory of being a high-level athlete to do these things, and when the body doesn't work in coordination, It's just one of the things that sucks so much, and one of the reasons why the Sixers probably end up losing the series, because Embiid was awesome, and it did not matter because there were just moments where he could not provide them the support that he had, despite the fact that even if Embiid were healthy, this is probably the worst Sixers team that he's had in the last 6 years. And the Sixers have gone through a lot of changes in those 6 years, but I know Maxey might win most improved player this year, but like Maxey is an all-star in the East that I don't think would have made the all-star team in the West this year. Like if Domantas Sabonis and Alperen Şengün and De'Aaron Fox are not all-stars in the West, I don't know that Tyrese Maxey would have been guaranteed a spot in the West, because who are you going to get rid of? I don't think Devin Booker made the all-star team in the West either this year. So like if Devin Booker and De'Aaron Fox at the same positions were not all-stars in the West, I don't think Tyrese Maxey would have been an all-star in the West. But besides the point, like that's one thing you're working with, plus Tobias Harris, who they've already come out and said they ain't re-signing Tobias Harris. Like they want the financial flexibility. We gave Tobias Harris a 5-year, $180 million contract, and we would not like to spend another cent on Tobias Harris. We would like to go sign Paul George. We would like to go sign Klay Thompson. We would not like to give Tobias Harris any more of our money, and Tobias Harris is now their third best player instead of being the fourth best player on the last two or three iterations of the Sixers team, and that kind of tells you all you need to know about just how good the Sixer team was in the first place. But Embiid's trying to play, and the body is not right, and so he's going to have moments like that where he does the epic, not the epic, he does the things that makes Joel Embiid great, and without a knee properly functioning, like the muscle memory is going to function without thinking about the knee, and that's one of the dangers of rushing players back from injury, when again, Joel Embiid had a torn meniscus. He still has a torn meniscus that they're just going to play on through and see what happens. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is our show. Thank you for stopping in here to the Take It Easy podcast. We have episodes every Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday, wired ups on the weekends for our most pressing and important topics. And this week, and this week only, a very special NFL draft live show that you guys should be keeping your eyes peeled for on Thursday night into Friday evening on this here fine platform. We might have some special guests joining us as well, so keep tuned and locked in for that bonus episode that will come at you on Friday morning, potentially Thursday evening, depending on our turnaround time on the NFL Draft live show. We thank you for stopping in here and supporting all of our programming. We will talk to you again on Wednesday. And in the meantime, take it easy.